This is Christopher O'Reilly, and welcome to this week's podcast of From the Top. Enjoy.
From NPR.
It's From the Top.
Celebrating the power of music.
In the hands of America's kids.
Here's our host, one of America's finest concert pianists, Christopher O'Reilly.
Thank you. Thanks, everybody, and welcome to the program. We're in Tacoma, Washington today, coming to you from the Rialto Theater, a beautiful 100-year-old Beaux-Arts house perched on the rather steep hillside of Tacoma's downtown, overlooking the waters of beautiful Puget Sound. A big thank you to Northwest Public Radio and the Broadway Center for the Performing Arts for bringing us here. And not only have we found great young performers from the region to be on today's program, we've found whole families of musicians. The young violist on today's show from south of here in Portland spent her days as a little kid hanging around her mom's busy violin studio, soaking in all the good instruction. And the teenage violinist from Bainbridge Island, Washington, that we'll meet today has both parents in the musical trade, and her performance is truly a family affair. She's playing a piece written for her by her dad. We'll be meeting these Pacific Northwesterners in a moment, but first, a young man who's hitched a ride with us all the way from Massachusetts. Please welcome 15-year-old pianist Derek Wang. Derek, tell everybody what you're going to play.
I have the Fast and Furious, Demonic and Unstoppable Toccata in D minor, Opus 11, by Sergei Prokofiev, written in 1912.
Please, when you're ready, take it from the top.
Thank you.
Derek Wang, 15-year-old pianist from Needham, Massachusetts, performing Prokofiev's Toccata in D minor. Well, Derek, that's a piece we all know and love, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody relish and enjoy performing it so much as you did just now. Just extraordinary.
Thank you very much.
And the last glissandis with your thumb. I mean, Chico Marx would have been proud. Really good. Really fantastic. You have a wonderful perspective, by the way, on what it's like to play a piece for an audience after you've been practicing for a long time, over and over. The difference between that solitude and then opening it up for the crowd.
Yeah, that's a really nice contrast that you just talked about there. Really, as musicians, we spend so much time by ourselves in a practice room behind closed doors, really just us and the music. And this is really one of the most introverted activities that you can think about. But on the other hand, it really comes down to nights like this when, you know, we're on stage in a spotlight with the public. And that is really one of the most, I would say, unnaturally extroverted things there is. And it's this combination, really. It's this combination that makes for any successful musician, and that really defines what being a musician is about and makes it really unique compared to other professions and other careers and other ventures in life.
Different experiences. Yeah. You've also observed that while you're in that extroverted space, that performance space, the audience helps you rediscover the music. How does that happen?
Yes. When you're practicing, what kind of happens is like when you say a word over and over and it starts to make no sense after around the 10th time. It's the same idea. When we're practicing a passage the first time, oh my God, it's so beautiful. The second time, oh, it's so beautiful, but if I could just change that one little note. The third time, oh, that one little note's killing me. And the fourth time, oh, it's all terrible. I just want that one note better. And then we work on this and we work on this and we work on this. And then you have an experience like I had when I was playing a Chopin ballad in the piano store in New York, and a young couple walks by. They have a baby in their carriage, and the woman just starts crying. And my job is unfortunately sometimes to make people cry, but it was just an eye-opening experience because there I was. I had practiced the ballad alone at home so much, and then just to see someone else's fresh reaction to it like I had the first time I listened to it, it was just amazing.
Very, very awe-inspiring. Beyond music, like any Boston area kid, you have another major passion. Tell everyone.
That would be baseball. Yes. Yes, big baseball fan. Yeah, some lax bros back home will be very unhappy when I say this, but baseball is the best sport. Best sport, yep. There's so much about it. For example, it's the only sport that doesn't run on a clock. You know, baseball doesn't go by hours and minutes and seconds. It goes by innings, and it goes by outs, and it goes by the count, the balls and the strikes. That's just so profound for me. Just like music, which runs in a rhythm, and downbeats and upbeats and syncopations that fall in a world that is far away and at the same time very close to our own. Baseball is very much like that for me. And it's also a great family experience. My whole family, very big Boston sports fans. And just to have, you know, just to have a game on the TV after dinner every night in the spring and summertime. And in the fall time, if we're lucky, which we were last year, that's just something that's just a tradition, part of me, you know.
Yeah, I wish I could say I feel kinship with that. I I grew up in Chicago.
Yeah.
Well, your love of music and baseball leads us to want to give you a little quiz about music and baseball.
Hey, take me out to the ball game. Take me out with the crowd.
Take me out to the ball game, an obvious place to start. Joanne?
Written in 1908 by Jack Norworth and Alberg von Tilzer, the chorus of this tune has become the great anthem of baseball. But can you tell me what the original verses are about? A. A down-on-his-luck guy who's broke and dreams of going to a game. B. A woman named Katie who lives and breathes baseball. Or C. The first words spoken by a previously mute little boy.
think B.
B, indeed. A woman named Katie. For some reason, her misguided boyfriend wants to take her to see a show, but Katie just wants to get to the ball game.
Okay, we'll move on to the classic Broadway musical Damn Yankees with words and music by Richard Adler and Jerry Ross. It features, of course, a singing baseball team. What lyrics immediately follow this refrain?
You've gotta have heart. All you really need is heart. When the odds are saying you'll never win.
Are they? A, that's when the grin should start. B, that's when you fall apart. Or C, don't think like Jean-Paul Sartre.
Well, B worked last time.
Right. You gonna go with that?
Yes, I will.
When the odds are saying you'll never win. It's A, that's when the grin should start. So start grinning there. Always have faith, Derek.
All right.
Okay, now this one's a gimme. Sung at every Red Sox game.
Hand, touching hand, reaching out, touching me.
Do the honors.
Touching you.
Derek Wang, 15-year-old pianist from Needham, Massachusetts. See you at Fenway, Derek. Bravo. Our second performer had to make her way down from the other end of Puget Sound on the ferry to be with us today from Bainbridge Island here in Washington State. This is 18-year-old violinist Sofia Stojanovic. Would you introduce the piece we're going to play together, and more importantly, the guy who wrote it, Sophia?
We will be performing a composition by my father, Patrick Stojanovic. It is, yeah, can't say my own last name. It's Serbian. It's a romance for violin and piano.
We're going to talk a little bit more about your dad after we hear this very lush and lyrical piece.
Thank you.
Sophia Stojanovic, 18 years old, a violinist from Bainbridge Island, Washington, performing music by her father, Patrick Stojanovic, Romance for Violin and Piano. Beautifully done, Sophia. Tell us more about your dad. Is he a violinist himself? Has he written a lot of violin music?
No, he is not a violinist himself. He actually started composition as a jazz pianist. And I guess I would like to think that I've been part of the reason why he's started writing for the violin.
I would think so.
I would hope.
So did he consult with you about how to write for the violin when writing this piece?
Well, while he was writing this piece, he was actually in residency at the McDowell Colony. So I was not with him, but on other compositions, he has consulted me. Recently, he wrote a solo violin sonata for the violin, which is a 180 on this kind of music. It's extremely difficult, but he definitely asked me, is this possible? Yes, it's possible, Dad. It's hard, but I can do it. So, yes.
Well, he may not have consulted you specifically on this piece, but he was thinking about you.
Yeah.
When I wrote this piece, I had her sound in mind. It's a sound that I live with over, you know, every day and over the past 10 years as she's grown as a violinist. And it very much influenced the composition of this work. And I find that her sound is rich and beautiful, and it's inspirational to me.
Your mom is another musician, an oboist, conductor, and teacher. Do you find it helpful having two parents in music?
I do. I'm sure many people would look at my kind of lifestyle and think, you were pressured into choosing violin, you have two parents who are, you know, tiger parents. You know, but actually I found it to be extremely helpful having two musicians as parents because they know the realistics of the field, they know exactly how hard it is, and they can be honest with me when they know if something is or isn't up to the standard. So I have only found it to be helpful.
Having music in the house and having it part of your conscience and consciousness, you have some pretty firm opinions about when and how kids should start playing the violin. Well, when did you start, for instance?
Yeah, I started when I was 6 years old, which is a little bit later, and I didn't actually get serious until I was 10 years old. And a lot of times nowadays, you will hear about someone starting the violin, and they'll be like, "Oh, you can't really start because you're already 7 or 10, and you know you're not going to make it. You got to start when you're 3." Mm-hmm. So I find that a little sad in our view of music, because to be a performer, to the dedication to the art form, is something I value above how well you are at a certain age. And I hear all the time in violin competitions, well, if you don't play the Tchaikovsky Violin Concerto by age 14, you're just a goner. And it's so strange, because if violin is something you love, who's to say when you're going to reach your peak? Why does a year or so matter?
Well, and as a person, you know, you're able to make better choices, I think, at a later age, and becoming serious about it instead of having it foisted on you.
Yeah.
Our good friend Carter Bray, principal cellist of the New York Philharmonic, didn't start the cello till he was 10 or 11. And
exactly.
In the meantime, knew all the names of all the bridges in New York City. And
there you go.
Can name all the airplanes that ever flew. And so, you know, having a full life, it comes across.
Oh, gosh,
it comes across, I think it affects the sound, it affects the way you play, and it affects the way, you know, you come to the violin now with your own sound, a sound that inspires a composer, your father. So I think this is a very good road you're on.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for being with us, Sophia.
Thank you so much for having
Bravo.
Me.
Sophia Stoyanovich, 18-year-old violinist from Bainbridge Island, Washington.
Like the piece Sophia just played, composed by her dad? Well, go to our website and learn more about Patrick Stoyanovich, his career, and his compositions. And while you're there, download our podcast available every week. That's fromthetop.org. Chris.
Thanks, Joanne. On stage now is a wonderful 17-year-old soprano from Flagstaff, Arizona. Her name is Cressley Figueroa, and she's brought us an aria from the opera Manon by Jules Massenet. Cressley, which aria?
This is the Adieu, Notre Petite Table.
And you were really moved when you first heard this. Where did you hear it for the first time?
I first heard it on a broadcast of the Met Live in HD. If you know what that is, they broadcast the performances at the Met through movie theaters all around the country. So I went to one of my local ones, and it was the Met's production of Manon, and starring Anna Netrebko. So I remember watching the opera. I knew nothing about it. I went in there totally ignorant. And she started singing this, and it was just the most powerful moment I'd experienced in a long time. I just started crying, and after I heard it, I was like, oh, my God, I have to sing this.
Well, that's a wonderful experience, but I understand the emotional connection continued while you were trying to learn it, and your teacher had to keep you from sobbing in mid-lesson.
It's true. No, I couldn't get through the piece, not even once, without crying towards the end or getting choked up. And as a singer, you get choked up. It's not cute.
So tell us what Manon is singing about here.
So in this aria, she has made the decision to leave the man that she loves in search of a different life. She is saying goodbye to the little table in their home. It's where they had all of their meals, where they gathered all the time. Just a lot of memories, and it's symbolic of her life that she's now saying goodbye to.
Pourtant, je sais toujours tu.
Presley Figueroa from Flagstaff, Arizona, performing Adieu, Notre Petite Table from the opera Menon by Jules Massenet. Stunning. I was crying. It's beautiful.
Thank you so much.
At the end of an interview we had with you earlier, you summed yourself up in a great way. Go ahead and share that with everybody.
I said, I'm a young Puerto Rican girl. I moved to Arizona at 4. I love to talk. I'm clumsy. I break everything I touch. I love life. I love music. I love people. That's about it.
Sums you up very nicely, but let's add some meat to those bones. Your family came to Arizona when you were just 4, but now you spend as many weekends as possible in New York. There's a good story behind that.
Yeah, so I attend the Juilliard Pre-College, like Derek, but I'm a guest. I'm not formally enrolled. And so how that happened was I auditioned the summer of my 8th grade year, and I just did it for feedback, you know, to see if I was able to compete in this music world. And I was accepted, and I was like, oh, my God, really? And so it was fantastic news, but we had realized, my family and I, that it just wasn't feasible financially and for many other reasons. So we were going to decline the acceptance. However, we were speaking to them on the phone after we'd made our decision, and we hadn't told them, but they immediately suggested, you know, we think she's very young, we want to watch The Voice, we don't want her to burn out, we want to take care of her, so we think it would be a good idea for her to come and see us as often as she can. We'd love to work with her, she can go through the pre-college day, and so that's been my arrangement for the past 4 years.
So you just go for weekends whenever you can, I guess. I think it's just the Flagstaff, Arizona. I know that's at 7,500 feet. She's got the breathing down. She's superwoman. It's clear. Now, you say you're clumsy, really? Clumsy, like, with everything? Or?
Yes.
Really? Watch those microphones.
Honestly.
Okay, yeah.
Everyone that's been here the past couple of days can attest to dropping sandwiches, tossing things. I fall all over the place. I trip all the time. I'm really glad that that didn't happen, but it probably would have.
Sorry, I drop names all the time. It happens. And the loving life and loving people part, your first teacher, Deborah Raymond, helped you out there in lots of ways, yes?
In every single way. Debbie, my first teacher and my current teacher, she was so much more than my voice teacher for me. And continues to be. I met her when I was 10. That's when I first started studying with her. And, you know, it was just some gross little 10-year-old coming into her studio with light-up Nikes and whatever else. But she took me in, and she was a huge mentor in many facets, not just my singing. And so she's been incredible, above and beyond a teacher and a woman. So
just great. You've had great training and continue to have great training, and you're well on your way. And Cressley, it was just an honor to play with you and have you on the program.
Thank you so much.
Wish you all the best. Thanks, Cressley. Cressley Figueroa from Flagstaff, Arizona.
If you like From the Top, make sure you like us on Facebook. It's the easiest way to stay in touch with everything From the Top. You'll find daily videos, articles, photos, and a thriving community of fans. Join the fun by going to facebook.com/fromthetopfans.
Support for From the Top comes from this and other radio stations. And from U.S. Trust, who believes that the arts play a vital role in stimulating the hearts and imaginations of our country's best young musicians, as well as NPR listeners. From New England Conservatory of Music, where young artists and teachers are committed to transforming classical music. Online at necmusic.edu. And from the Jack Kent Cook Foundation, whose mission is to advance the education of students of exceptional promise who have financial need. On the web at jkcf.org. This is NPR.
Thank you.
From NPR, it's From the Top, celebrating the power of music in the hands of America's kids. This week, we're coming to you from the Rialto Theater in Tacoma, Washington. Coming up, the opening movement of the Grieg Sonata for cello and piano performed by a 15-year-old from California. Today's show in Tacoma is presented by Northwest Public Radio and the Broadway Center for the Performing Arts and made possible with support from Ted Brown Music and South Sound Magazine. Here again is Christopher O'Reilly.
Thanks, Joanne. Joining us now is a 16-year-old violist from Portland, Oregon. Please welcome Maya Hoffman. Maya, you've brought a favorite of mine from the viola repertoire. Tell everybody in the audience what it is, will you?
I'm going to be playing the second movement of the Schumann Fairy Tales.
Maya Hoffman, 16-year-old violist from Portland, Oregon, performing the second movement from Märchenbilder, Fairy Tales by Robert Schumann. Maya is one of our Jack Kent Cook young artists. Just great. Love that piece.
Thank
it just
you.
Goes into a whole other world, and you really inhabit it with such strength and
thank
fire.
You.
Maya, I understand, besides your wonderful viola playing, you love to fiddle, too. Tell everybody who you fiddle with every Thursday. You have somebody at school you do fiddling with.
I do. My chemistry teacher, who actually is here tonight.
Wow.
It was freshman year, it was like second or third week of school, and his son was sitting next to me in school orchestra and said, hey, you know, me and my dad like to fiddle at lunch, and if you would like to join us, that'd be awesome. So I said, sure, I love to fiddle.
Wow.
And so I went, and I've been going ever since, every Thursday at lunch.
So that's a lot of tunes he's taught you, I bet, huh?
Yes, yeah.
That's great. And his being at your school has helped you a lot emotionally, I understand, during what's been a really tough time.
Yeah, my mom was diagnosed with ovarian cancer in September, and that was a big change. Not many teenagers go through that. So, you know, everybody really came together, and having him at school has been a lot of support. He's been really supportive, and it's not a relationship that you tend to have with teachers, and it's one that I really value.
It's so really thank great. You. Quite valued, very special. Yeah. We mentioned at the top of the show that your mom is a violin teacher. She started you out, and now you've got your own teacher. Is there any conflict now with your other teacher?
There was a lot of conflict when I was little because there was always ideas coming from everybody, and I had my own ideas. But I think we've really found a balance, or I've been able to find a balance between taking ideas from everybody, and I've really, you know, I found my own space where I can practice on my own, and that's really helped me to develop my own artistry.
And everybody's pulling for you, so that's in the end what matters. Well, it's going very well. Thank you, Maya, for being with us.
Thank you.
Maya Hoffman, 16-year-old violist from Portland, Oregon.
Over the last 8 years, From the Top and the Jack Kent Cook Foundation have awarded nearly $2 million in scholarships to talented young musicians who have financial need. We still have more to give. Go to fromthetop.org to learn more. Chris.
With me now is an outstanding 15-year-old cellist from Cupertino, California, Jeremy Tai. Jeremy, tell everyone what you and I will be playing together.
All right. We will be playing the first movement of the Grieg Cello Sonata.
Thank you. First movement of the Grieg Sonata for cello and piano, played by Jeremy Tai, 15 years old, our cellist from Cupertino, California. Great to hear that piece again. It's a neglected classic, and you play it beautifully. You're clearly an accomplished player, but is it true that practicing doesn't come easy for you? You don't like practicing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I really hate practicing. Yeah, don't tell my teacher that. I find that drilling, like intonation especially, extremely boring because it's like playing the same thing over and over again, and like it gets really dull after a while. But, you know, like, whenever I try to, like, look for the deeper meaning of the music, then it starts to become more interesting because then it's like solving a puzzle, like, what did a composer wanted to express?
Either that or watching baseball during practicing can take some of the sting out of that drudgery.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on figuring out a way to get yourself to practice. Going deep is obviously the best way. But tell me, when is music most fun for you?
Oh, I really love to jam out with my friends. We start like playing all the popular tunes that we all like, and then we can eventually like try to get like something going. And that creative process is really fun for me.
How about chamber music? Does that have the same sort of charge of interaction for
you? Yeah, exchanging all these ideas like about what to do, what to play, and what kind of shaping there is really fun.
So, yeah, you mentioned about arranging music for you and your friends to play. So tell me what happens in that process. Do you do all the arrangements, or do their friends help you get things together?
I do both do it myself, and also a group work. So in the beginning, I write down the music and then what I think should happen, and then I try it out with my friends, and then we make a lot of changes and like add in a lot of crazy new ideas.
Well, we're going to hear one of your arrangements right now. It's music from a Hayao Miyazaki film arranged for four cellos. The four members of the cello quartet you're in at the San Francisco Conservatory of Music. In addition to you, there's Catherine Kim, 16, Irene Jeong, and Minku Lee, both 17. They all hail from Palo Alto. You guys call your quartet something that is appropriate for the piece you're about to play. What is the name of the quartet?
We are the Compito Cello Quartet, and Compito. We are called the Compito because it is a small, round, spiky ball of sugar that Japanese children love to eat. And it is also a recurring theme in Hayao Miyazaki's films. And our goal as a quartet is to bring the audience back to when they were a child and enjoyed a childhood innocence.
It's a wonderful sentiment. We also want to thank your great coach, Jonathan Coe. Okay, Jeremy, so tell us what you're going to play.
All right, we're going to play The Path of the Wind by Joe Hisaishi from the movie My Neighbor Totoro.
We were able to shoot a fantastic music video of this piece with this quartet yesterday, just up north in Seattle at the Chihuly Garden. It's a must-see at fromthetop.org. But now, I want to thank all of our great young performers on today's show, and thank you all for listening. This is Christopher O'Reilly. Please join me next week. And now, Compito Cello Quartet. You can take it from the top. Thank you.
From the Top is written and produced by Tom Bagley and Tim Banker, with music director Tom Vinieri. The tour producer is David Balsam, and the production manager is Elizabeth DeVore. Technical direction by Barrett Willett, with Dan Hallis and John Servies. The executive producers are Gerald Slavitt and Jennifer Hurley-Wales. I'm Joanne Robinson. From the Top is an independent nonprofit organization based in Boston. Our founding partners are New England Conservatory and WGBH Boston. If you'd like to appear in our program, apply online at fromthetop.org. From the Top's home is New England Conservatory, where outstanding young artists and inspirational teachers are transforming classical music.
Support for NPR comes from the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people. Online at wtgrantfoundation.org. From the Lemelson Foundation, committed to improving lives through invention in the U.S. and developing countries. On the web at lemelson.org. From the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. And from Joyce V. Hale, in the interest of engaging an informed and civil electorate. This is NPR.
This is Christopher O'Reilly, and I hope you had fun listening to this week's podcast. As you might imagine, making From the Top happen week after week costs quite a bit of dough. If you believe in what we do, we really need you to help us out. Make a contribution of any size at fromthetop.org.